A little bit of a challenge to be the last one at the end of a day. We've gotten through 77 pages of our syllabus since 8:30 or 9 this morning. You've only got 78 and 79 left to do. So can I just get everybody to stand up for just a moment, if you would? Let's take Tim's suggestion and just have a moment of prayer here. Heavenly Father, we thank you for the time we've had together today to learn together. Father, we ask that you give me wisdom as I present, and yes, that you give this audience some tolerance and energy to last these last 30 to 40 minutes. We lift all this up to you, Father. Amen, and you're free to stretch around and move just a little bit as we get going here. So I'm going to do a little bit of ultrasound teaching here in these last 30 to 40 minutes. I'm going to have a mixed message right off the bat. First of all, I'm going to say, yes, you can learn ultrasound and hopefully try to impart a little bit of that knowledge today. I'm a real hypocrite because I spend most of my time here in America telling all the other doctors other than radiologists that, no, you shouldn't be doing ultrasound. Leave that to the ultrasound techs and radiologists who've had more training and that kind of thing. But when you're in a third world country, there's no question that a little portable ultrasound machine can be one of the most powerful diagnostic tools that you have at your disposal, and particularly in the arena of surgery, but in almost every phase of medicine, ultrasound can have a huge impact. And you often don't have an ultrasound tech or a radiologist that you can turn to. You're it, tag. So I think that hopefully going to be able to impart a few skills. I'm going to say that this is a 30 to 40 minute presentation, and I know there's some ultrasound techs in our audience. They spend 2 full years after their prerequisites learning nothing but ultrasound day in and day out, and then after that spend a couple of years getting experience and getting their individual boards and OB and that kind of thing. And they know so much more than I do about scanning and how to use ultrasound machines that I'm sure that they feel that they've got an imposter in front of them. So basically, you've got a hypocritical imposter trying to teach you a little bit of ultrasound. How do you go about learning ultrasound? What's the phases of that? We're really only dealing today with the top line, a little bit about how to use the machine and how to go about scanning. The rest of it is what takes time, and Tim, you were supposed to write that it's hard to teach a skill without some experience. But you have to know and learn the anatomy of any given area that you're trying to scan. If you don't know that, you'll be lost and hopeless. Over time, through scanning, you get to learn what normal looks like in any given organ, any part of the body. Hopefully, you'll come to recognize when something is abnormal. And then over time, you learn to use your discrimination and properly analyze that for your differential and diagnosis and treatment. Today, I'm going to go over just a little bit of the physics. We're going to look at knobology on what you can control on a machine very simply to optimize the image. And then we'll look at actually how to go about doing a scan and how to approach it. So an ultrasound transducer takes electrical energy and it converts that into sound waves. It sends them into the body. The transducer acts as both a send and receive unit, so sound waves hit some object and bounce back. The transducer receives those images or receives that information and creates an image out of it. The ultrasound beam gets reflected back at tissue interfaces where there's a change in what's called acoustical impedance, and that's essentially the speed of sound in tissue. So when it hits one of these interfaces, some of the sound wave is reflected back. Some of it continues on deeper into the tissue to keep reflecting back to ultimately create that image. What can you do to optimize an image? How do you go about making it good? So the first thing that's in your control is what kind of transducer do I use? And here's sort of the three fundamental options. Over on the left side, you'll see curved array transducers. You can see the curve on the face of it. The ones at the top are linear array transducers, and the ones at the bottom are intercavitary, of which transvaginal scans are by far and away the most common and important. Your curved array transducer is the workhorse. It's what you'll have on most of your machines. The higher the megahertz, then the more tissue resolution you have, but the less penetration. So these are usually phased array. They have different megahertz. 3 to 5 is a real typical pattern. They have medium tissue penetration, and they also have medium resolution. But they're definitely the workhorse. And this is what kind of image you'd get from it. You can see the curve on the skin surface up at the top there, and indicating that it's coming from a curved array transducer. Linear array transducers, they run their megahertz ranges from 7 to 15. They have great near-field resolution and tissue discrimination, but their disadvantage is that they can't penetrate very deep. So they're great for thyroid and breast and testes and most vascular studies, but don't use a linear array transducer to try to look at a liver or a kidney or the retroperitoneum. This is a transverse view of a thyroid, and you can see that incredibly high, great tissue resolution and detail in the thyroid and in the adjacent vessels. But you'll see that 1, 2, 3 is the centimeter in depth. You get beyond 3 or 4 centimeters deep, and you're not going to get much information from a linear array transducer. I'd also like you to understand the concept of attenuation. As the beam gets reflected back at all these interfaces, it has less and less strength as it gets down into the deeper tissues. And so that's called beam attenuation. And you'll have buttons on this machine that are designed to compensate for that. And those buttons are called gain. So over on the left side, this happens to be the Sonisite unit that we're using today. You'll see something on your ultrasound machine. There'll be a TGC is a total gain control, or you'll have, in this particular case, I can affect the near gain, far gain, or the all of it overall. And that what you're simply trying to do is boost the beam information from when it's getting attenuated so that you can end up with a good diagnostic study across the entire image. I'll also be later showing you that we'll be changing depth as we scan, and so that depth button and gain button are important, and then there's other little things you can do like measure. There's a zillion other controls, especially on high-end big scan machines, but for the most part, if you just know that you're going to need to be adjusting gain and adjusting the depth that you're looking at, you'll get most of it very quickly. Here's just an example of what happens when with that tissue attenuation. The liver is real bright at the anterior part of it, but as you get deeper and deeper towards the diaphragm, it gets darker and darker because that beam is attenuating. So you're going to use the gain to compensate for that and make it all look the same density. Even if you don't know what you're doing, you want to at least sound like you know what you're doing. So you want to know ultrasound lingo and be able to communicate with other people accurately about what you're seeing. So these are the common terms you'll hear. Anechoic means that there's just no echoes within something. So a typical cyst or urinary bladder would be anechoic. In this picture, the gallbladder and the portal vein over on the left side are the anechoic images or part of that image that you see. Hypoechoic just means that something has less echoes or is darker than the adjacent tissue we're referring to. So there's a hypoechoic mass in the liver. The right kidney that you see down right in the middle, down deep, that little oval thing, it's normally hypoechoic to liver tissue. So that's the relationship you expect to see in echo texture. Isoechoic means it's relatively similar in pattern, and here's a pus-filled gallbladder that is relatively isoechoic to the liver parenchyma that's adjacent to it. Here's a lipoma in the breast, which, because of the rest of the fatty tissue that are deposited through the breast, is relatively isoechoic in relation to breast parenchyma. And then here's a hyperechoic means that it shows increased echoes compared to the whatever you're referring it to. So this kidney is hyperechoic in relationship to the liver, and that's it's abnormal and usually an indicator that the kidney has a diffuse parenchymal disease. Another example of hyperechoic things are hemangiomas within the liver, which typically are very, very hyperechoic with sharp margins and those kind of characteristics. And then I also want you to understand the concept of increase through transmission. When the beam is going down through the solid tissues, it's being reflected back and being attenuated, but when it hits a liquid, like the gallbladder or your urinary bladder or a big vessel, then it's not being attenuated, it's going through full strength. And when it gets to the next echogenic interface, a big strong signal comes back because it's got a strong beam at that point. So over on the left side of the image, the beam's being continuously attenuated through the liver texture, but when it goes through the gallbladder and the IVC, you see how bright it is in posterior to those. And that's an important thing to understand because it helps us in identifying cysts. This is a breast cyst, and you can see very clearly that back wall enhancement is another phrase for it, or increase through transmission. You can use your gain on your machine to fill in a cyst and make it look solid, and it's sometimes something where you're sitting there trying to decide, is this thing solid or cystic? Well, if you can see strong increase through transmission or back wall enhancement in something, then that's a real strong indicator that you're dealing with a cyst. An abscess might be an example where it's got a lot of echoes in it, but it's also got a good through transmission. It's mostly liquid and cystic. Then the opposite of that is an acoustical shadow. So here you see a gallbladder, and behind the gallbladder, that increase through transmission. But if you just look to the right side of that, bowel gas is very, very echogenic. It has a strong acoustical impedance interface, so the vast majority of the beam gets reflected right back at that initial air interface with the bowel. And that's why you get that real bright echo up near the surface. And then the beam can't get beyond that to get any more information, so you get that big dark shadow with no information. The one on the left side of the arrows is just an artifact called edge block or edge enhancement. So one of the more common areas that we'll see this acoustical shadow is looking for gallstones. So if a gallstone has enough calcium in it, it'll create that bright interface. You don't get any information beyond that, and you get that dark acoustical shadow behind it. We'll also see that as we try to scan through ribs, you'll see these dark bands come down where the rib blocks all the information. So the other thing that I'd like for you to be thinking about is using acoustical windows. That's when you use either another organ or a fluid-filled structure to look through that to better see information down deep in the tissues, deep to that structure. Certainly the most common scenario that we'll see that in is in the pelvis. If the bladder's not full, then the uterus will anavert, it'll have bowel around it, and it's not laid out in a way that you can really get very good information. But if you fill the bladder and use it as your acoustical window, it'll both lay the bladder out in a more linear fashion, so you're scanning right directly on top of it, and you're using that bladder as a window. And we'll also be showing an example of using the liver as a window to get through to the right kidney, which can sometimes be tough to see. We're going to get started here. What I'm encouraging you to do is to have a systematic approach to scanning and be very thorough and methodical. We'll go from one organ to another. You start and you look through in whatever sequence you choose, but we'll take the liver, we'll look at all the parts of the liver, be very thorough about it, making a decision in our mind, is the liver normal or abnormal? Then we chuck that and go on to the gallbladder, to the kidneys, and et cetera. What happens very frequently, I'm called down to the ER or to some other place, and the people say, I've got a finding I want you to see. They've been scanning something, and can you help us look at this mass? Well, unless it's really a crisis or an emergency medical situation, I never start by looking at the mass, but I start by going through and doing a routine exam of each and every organ, because I'm going to get a lot of information that when I finally get to that mass or that symptom or problem area, that I'm going to figure it out mainly through my scanning ahead of time. So you want to scan. You don't want to be too fast and just zipping all over the abdomen like crazy with your transducer, but you also have to get the exam done today, and you don't want to be either a cheetah or a sloth. So you want to sort of just be a medium kind of speed on this. I want you to first think about scanning like a tech. Ignore the clinical picture, take the patient, and start going through these organs and making your decisions about each and every area. And then once you've done that, then I want you to start thinking like a doc. And now you're problem-solving scanning, where you're saying, okay, that patient has a mid-abdominal mass. What is it? Let's try to figure this out. Or they've got right lower quadrant pain. What do I need to specifically be looking for with the ultrasound to try to figure that out? So there's both components that are important. And a good ultrasound tech will also do this. They'll scan like a tech, but they'll also be trained to think like a doc and try to get as much information to explain what is the patient's problem. The upper abdominal scan that we're going to embark, and I'll ask my victim if they'll come forward, helped by my wife. Kathy is a World Medical volunteer, or actually employee. She's a placement coordinator, and she's agreed to let me scan her in front of all you guys today. But we're just going to go through this, and we'll scan and we'll look at the liver, the gallbladder and ducts, the kidneys, the pancreas, the aorta and retroperitoneum, the spleen and the heart, a brief look at the heart and pericardium. That's what you should look at in every abdominal ultrasound, even if it's just a brief look, but look at those things. If you've got a patient with right upper quadrant pain, and I hear so many docs say, well, let me just see if they've got gallstones. And they look quickly at the gallbladder, and then they fail to carefully examine all the other areas and see other disease processes or really find the real source of their pain, which is an obstructed right kidney or something of that nature. So we're going to try to cover all of these areas, and I urge you to do that on any given scan. And then when we get into the pelvic area, you're going to, again, try to go methodically through that. You first look at the uterus and make an assessment, a judgment about what's going on with the uterus and endometrium. And then you move on and you look at the ovaries and the adnexal regions and make a decision. And then you look at the cul-de-sac and check it out. You look at the wall of the bladder and see how that's doing. And then you might go up and check briefly in the Morrison's pouch to look for fluid or the kidneys to see if they're obstructed. So you just go through that in each and every patient. Okie doke. I think that's good on that. My favorite part of the talk is getting to take my jacket off that my wife made me wear. Get ready to do some combat radiology here. I give a real deep thanks to John Pope and the rest of the IT staff here at the Cove. I don't think this has ever been done before, and they were very, very helpful in trying to get this set up and make it all work technically. So keep your fingers crossed, prayers up. The idea here is I'm going to show you we're going to have a image of my hand on the abdomen when we need to have that, and then we'll show the ultrasound image up on the screen of what I'm actually seeing on screen and sort of try and get you to get the idea of where do you have to scan to look for what. So you have to have a coupling agent. And so Kathy, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you for the pay raise.
So we did this, we went through a little bit of this earlier with Kathy. I looked at her a bit. So you have to have a coupling agent. Squirt a little bit of gel on. That can be KY or ultrasound gel, or if you have to, lotion. And then I've got a curved array transducer, 3 to 5 megahertz. And if we could focus along the side of that, on every transducer that you'll have, you'll be able to see that there's usually an indicator of a direction. And so, in this one, it happens to be a little block there, and that tells me that whatever that block is, that's going to be on the left side of the screen. So if I just start here, and I might just say a word of patient prep. In the U.S., we all try to do all abdominal ultrasounds in the morning or early afternoon when we can have the patient in PO overnight. There's twofold purpose of that. One is to try to get bowel gas down as much as you can. And then the other is to allow the gallbladder to distend and not have it discharged from a fatty meal or something like that. Having said that, and that's what we do all the time, and a lot of times we won't do a scan and say we've got to do the patient tomorrow. But if you're out in the field, honestly, 95% of the time, no matter whether the patient's been eating or not, you can accomplish an effective ultrasound and see what you need to see. The gallbladder usually will be filled regardless. There's the occasions when you have to see a contracted gallbladder and it's confusing. You have to have the patient come back the next day in PO. But for the most part, you can get a diagnostic scan without the long preparation. So let's just start. I'm going to put the scanner transversely on the abdomen there. That block is going to be over towards me. And let me just say a word. We'll flash in that ultrasound image. And just a word on orientation. every time you scan, you want to orient so that when you're looking at the screen, it's like a CAT scan image. The patient's right side of her abdomen will be over on our visual left side of the screen, and her left side is going to be on the right. So if I wanted to look more to her right side of the rest of the liver, I'm going to angle over this way. If I want to look more over to the left, that way. So that's the orientation that you should be on all transverse images, okay? If we change and put the transducer sagittally, then we always want to put the head at the left side. So I'm looking up towards the heart there, and then down towards the feet in that direction, okay? So now I want to just show you a bit about what I was talking about gain. So I'll just go to where we only see the ultrasound image on big screen. And let me brighten things up here a little bit. First of all, I'm going to use the depth. And what you want to do with depth is just have whatever you're scanning basically fill the field, but so that you can still see around it a bit. So the focus here is on the left lobe of the liver. And that's what we're seeing, all this tissue here. So I want to make it as big as I can, but I still want to be able to see around the margins of it. So I wouldn't want to go, I wouldn't want to make it so small that it looks really tiny and distant, but I don't want to go the other direction and make it so big that I lose information. Now I can't see the entire thing. So you adjust that depth button just up and down until the area of interest fills the majority of the image, but still can see around it, okay? And now I want to show you the effect of gain. The bottom button on this screen happens to be the total gain, so I can either darken it up, or if I want to brighten it up, I can make it as bright as I need to. And then on this, you can control the near field, so that if I brought up the near field too much, it makes it too bright, so I'm going to dial that down a little bit, and I can adjust the far field. And so you just use that gain button until you have a relatively pleasing, homogeneous image that's about the same density all the way across the entire image or the area that you're trying to scan. And you'll be fiddling with the gain and fiddling with that depth button throughout the whole exam. So let's approach a liver and just talk about how we're going to scan a liver. So I usually start with the liver. And I'll start right here in the mid-epigastrium and look at the left lobe. I'm transverse right now. And then to scan it, I just press down and I'll angle upwards. And we can go where you can maybe see my hand on this if it's effective. I'll angle upwards until I can see the beating heart. So I know I've gotten above the left lobe. Then I'll start coming back down into it. And then I'll just sweep continuously in medium speed looking at it until I finally get all the way out of it and I'm down into the stomach and bowel down below. And I'll usually do that back and forth a couple of times. And so that's how I technically scan it. But what's going on in my brain is I'm looking at that and I'm trying to make an assessment of the echo texture. Is it normal or is it hyper or hypochoic? Is it homogeneous as it should be? And are there any focal masses or any dilated ducts? Those are all the process of what's going on in my brain about the left lobe. I'll just note while we're here that the left lobe is an excellent place to lay out the portal triad in a linear fashion. So all these real bright echoes that you can see, we just go to ultrasound image alone here, and I think you'll be able to see it better. But all these bright echogenic images that you see, okay, stop breathing for just a moment and hold it. Okay. Those are the triads, so it's composed, you can breathe, composed of the portal vein, the hepatic artery, and the bile duct. And normally when you're out in the liver parenchyma, you won't see those two smaller items. The only thing that you'll see is a portal vein, okay? But when the biliary system gets dilated, then you'll get a sign that's called the shotgun sign. And instead of just seeing the portal vein, you'll see another tubular track running along beside it. It looks like a shotgun or a railroad track sign. And that's a sign of intrahepatic biliary dilatation. And the left lobe going transverse across the left lobe is a very good place to look for that. And if you were looking for it, maybe you might increase your depth a little bit, try to get the best discrimination you can. But because all the ducts are mainly running out across the left lobe in this direction, then you're oriented properly to see that railroad track sign. So it's a very good place to look for that, a little bit of a clue or a tip there. So after you've scrutinized that left lobe in the transverse view, I'm going to swing it straight sagittal, okay, head to the left side of the screen, and then I'm going to do the same thing. I'm going to go as far over to the left as I can, and I'll start swinging back across, and I'm just assessing, is the size of the liver normal? Is the echo texture normal? Are there any focal masses? All those thoughts are going through my brain, okay? And then while I'm here, I'll usually take this time to look briefly at the heart to make sure there's no pericardial effusion. This is not an echo, okay, but take a deep breath. You have the patient breathe and you get down and push an angle. You have to put a little bit of pressure. You'll see the heart beating there. And then the pericardial effusion would be right along that interface between the left lobe and the pericardium there. Okay, you can breathe. And you can double check that. Again, take a deep breath in. Now I'm transverse and I'm just doing the same thing, looking there at the heart beating, and I'd see a small pericardial effusion quite easily that way. So I'll just make one other little anatomic observation here. The structure that we're seeing that's quite echogenic that runs up here, anybody know what that structure is, sort of in between the left and right lobe? I'm transverse now. Okay, that's the falciform ligament. So it's the residua of what you've of the umbilical vein that was coming in, and it leaves just down to a scarred echogenic area. So you don't want to mistake the falciform ligament for a mass. Okay. We're going to move over and start taking a look at her right lobe now. We're still on the topic of the liver. And you'll typically start sagittally and subcostally and see what we can see. Well, in this particular instance, Kathy's liver is very high. She's got a lot of bowel gas down low, and I can't see anything. I can't see the liver at all scanning where I'm trying to look for it. So there's a couple of things we're going to do. We're going to have her, first time we'll just have her take a real deep breath, take a super deep breath and hold it. And so that'll often bring the liver down. And we can look at the gallbladder, but not much of the liver substance, just a little bit of that right there where we can see liver. Okay, you can breathe. Okay, one more time, deep breath in. So you use patient's breathing to bring organs within view. Now I'm picking up a little bit more over here. You can breathe. I can't see the whole thing, so I'm going to increase my depth a little bit. Okay, now deep breath in. Okay, so I get it to where I can see all the way down to the diaphragm, and now I'm going to make a sweep across from the far lateral side over on towards me, and I'll sweep in medially, looking as best I can, seeing as much of that right lobe as I can. Okay, back and forth, looking. Masses, size, texture, you can breathe. Okay. Sometimes it's almost impossible to see the liver subcostally. That's often the way that we get the best view, but sometimes not. And so then you've got to go and find a window, another window into it. So the most common thing that you can do to really help you out here is you go intercostally. And so the ribs are wrapping around, and why don't we show my scanning hand if we can on that screen. Yeah, this is, maybe use the other screen there if you can. The other camera. Okay, so I don't know how well this shows, but I'm trying to align with those ribs to get my transducer down into the intercostal space, okay? Okay, now we can go back to the ultrasound image. So now I've all of a sudden and you want to push in a little bit, get the transducer down in between the ribs, maybe a little uncomfortable, not too bad. And now all of a sudden I'm able to get a better view of that liver and the diaphragm. And again, I want to just scan through it from one side to the other, and I'm looking for masses and dilated ducts, all those factors. You can get a general idea of size, and I'll just show you a little bit of a... If you get sagittal in the mid-clavicular line, roughly, and freeze the image, first of all, I want you to know that most ultrasound machines, if you've been scanning, they'll have a trackball or a pad, and if you just run your finger back and forth over it, it will show you your last bunch of images. So if you're having trouble catching something, if you scan through it, you can just trackball that back and forth until you see that thing that you want. So now I've got my liver there, and I'm going to do a measurement. I push on the old calipers for a measurement, and we'll run it from the diaphragm. You hit it select, and then you run down to where you estimate that lower part is. And so typically, you know, in a normal liver, 13 to 15, 16 centimeters. If it starts getting into the 17 to 18 range, you start wondering. And if it's 19 or 20 or 22 centimeters, you know that it's definitely enlarged. So using that sagittal midclavicular measurement is sort of gets you a gestalt of how big is this liver. Okay, we're going to move on now. Just add one more little thought about the liver. As we scan up here, you'll see these dark vessels, but notice how they don't have any echogenicity around the wall of it and the direction that they're heading. And those are hepatic veins, and I'd contrast that to any of the vessels that you see in the liver that have echogenic walls, like here. The portal system will have very bright echogenic walls because it's got connective tissues and lots of, and the biliary duct, the hepatic artery, and a lot of interfaces, so it creates echoes around it. Hepatic veins have virtually nothing. They're extremely thin-walled and just have hepatic parenchymal cells, so they don't create much of an echo reflection back. So if you're ever wondering, if you're looking at the vessels, you can easily tell that. Now we'll look at the gallbladder in Kathy. The way that I can best see the gallbladder, you can find it if you scan along the liver margin. In Kathy, the best look I get is actually going intercostally. And on gallbladders, we try to look both sagittally from one side to the other. And here's a gallbladder that we're looking at. There's bowel gas that creates that real bright interface behind it. Scan from one side to the other, look all the way down into the neck, all the way to the fundus, and then you usually want to try to get some other orthogonal view to that. So if you scanned it sagittally, then you scan it axially and start from the neck and hopefully run down into the neck and see what you need to see. Sometimes the best imaging of this, we'll have the patient roll up. We're going to have Kathy do that in a minute. We'll look at the gallbladder in two planes, making sure that we've examined it for gallstones or any wall thickening or those kind of things. And then I want to show you how to look for the common duct. The portal vein where it enters the liver is usually a quite a sizable vessel. And the common duct will invariably be just anterior to that structure. So we're catching portal vein. So I'm going to freeze this, and then I'll be able to point out the things that... So we have portal vein back here posteriorly, and then in front of it is the... It's actually, by this time, probably the common hepatic duct, not the common bile duct, because the cystic duct hasn't entered it, but it's always referred to as the CBD, and you can use your calipers to put a measurement on that and establish that as a baseline, you know, usually 3 to 5 millimeters, 6 millimeters is a normal, and anything over 8 or 10, certainly dilated. So that's the location that you look for that. And just think about the CBD is usually running either vertically or slightly towards the liver, so you just orient your transducer in that direction so that so that you have your transducer running along the length of that. Okay, let's move on and look at kidneys real quick here. The right kidney can often be tough to see. I'll first start off just trying to see it subcostally here, but often the colon blocks your view of that. It's very, very hard to get to and see the right kidney. So in Kathy, this is where I'll use the liver as a window. So I'm going intercostally again and scanning over and picking up the top of the right kidney right there, scanning intercostally. She's been drinking a lot. Her bladder may be about to burst. And you can see a little bit of hydro there in the center. I'll show that to you. That was not there earlier in the day. And so you do the same thing. Once you get to where you can see the kidney, instead of just saying, glory, hallelujah, I see the kidney, I'm just moving down now. I'm going to scan back and forth through it from one side to the other, looking for hydronephrosis, abnormalities, all those kind of things that could be going on. You'll also want to go orthogonal on the kidney. Now I'm in a transverse position, and I'll scan from the top where it's just coming out of the liver. I see the kidney and follow it on down to the bottom as best I can. Let's have you, okay, if you'll roll up on your left side. Are you doing okay on the bladder?
Yeah.
Okay. So, by the way, I didn't mention it at first, but whenever you get set up to do a scan, get the machine in a place that's where you can see the image and control the machine and get you and the patient comfortable. I can't emphasize that enough. Don't be in a real bright room where you've got the machine looking over your shoulder or in some weird position. You can't adjust the controls. Set it up for success from the very get-go. Take the time and trouble to get yourself, the patient, and the machine in places where you can see it and control it. And at bedside, where we do a lot, I'll often just sit down beside the patient because I've got a real, comfortable approach there. And sometimes when you have the patient roll up, it just gets you a little bit better angle to get in and see that kidney, at least the upper pole. Take a deep breath in and then blow it all the way out. And so I'm using her breathing to get down and see the lower pole there. Okay, scan it. Take a deep breath in. Maybe this will pull it down into the field of view. So I'm using that breathing to just try to get the whole kidney. Okay? I'm going to show you real quickly for a moment. Kidneys can be really tough, especially the left kidney, and something that's often worth taking the trouble to do. If it's kidneys particularly that are your emphasis, go ahead and roll all the way onto your stomach for a moment, Kathy. Okay, if you just get the patient totally on their stomach, and now we're going to use the posterior muscles as our acoustical window. So I'm just going to scan paraspinous. And all of a sudden, that kidney that might have been so difficult to see in the front becomes very evident because it's right underneath the skin in the back. So take a deep breath. And now I've got another great look at the lower pole of the kidney, which is often the hardest to see when you're looking transabdominally from the front. Okay, you can breathe. So that was the right kidney. Now over on the left side, I'm going to show you what a nice view we get of her left kidney. And we're going to see in just a moment how hard her kidney is to see from an abdominal approach. Okay, just a few more minutes here, Kathy. If you just roll back onto your back for just a moment. So we've assessed the liver, gallbladder, ducts, right kidney. I'll often start with the patient laying on their stomach and see what I can see of a left kidney. Okay, take a deep breath in. We'll see if we can bring it down where we can see it. It's just all, see that echogenic density and shadowing? It's just all her left colon that's hiding that kidney. So I'll give it a try this way, but it's often for both kidney and spleen, you're just out of the water with this. And take the trouble. Maybe the patient's hurting, but if you need that info, let's roll you up. We'll have the patient roll towards us. And then we can start getting down in between the, right below the ribs, subcostally, seeing the lower pole a bit. Take a deep breath. Have her breathe, and maybe bring the upper pole in. Okay. So different ways to get to that left kidney, posteriorly and from the side. And then the spleen can often be a real bugger, but this position is usually helpful. Almost always with the spleen, you have to go intercostally. Now I'm up in the lung, so that lung has that very bright interface and shadow. You're not going to get any information scanning through it. So I've got to drop down a little bit until I get just below the lung. I'm pushing really hard and angling back and forth. And I just got a tiny glimpse of the... Okay, there we go. Her spleen is very difficult to see, but... So I'm using that trackball feature to see if I brought it into view at one of those images. And so here's the spleen, and again, I would scan through it as much as I can to see about the size of the spleen and the imaging. Is there any focal mass? Is there any problems with it? Abscesses, those kind of things. So posterior scanning for that spleen, sometimes even all the way from the back. If they're laying up, you can come back and scan across and get a glimpse of that spleen right above the kidney. Did not work very good on Kathy to see that, so you just have to play with it. Okay, let's go on your back and we'll finish up with the pancreas and retroperitoneum. Okay, so we're going to go back to the way we started for a look at the pancreas, right back transverse in the epigastrium. And I'm going to mag the image up. And the pancreas can often be sort of a bugger for people to initially get to recognize. But the key anatomic structure to look for when you're looking for the pancreas is to look for that splenic vein as it's coming over. So here's left lobe of liver in the front. Here's the splenic vein behind it. Aorta will be just deep to that. The splenic vein is coming over, joining the superior mesenteric vein to form the portal to go up into the liver. And the pancreatic tissue will always be sitting right in anterior to that portal vein. So this gray tissue here is the pancreatic tissue. And we'll look again as in real time. We'll watch it, and when it wraps around here, that's the head of the pancreas, and the tissues that lie in between the superior mesenteric vein and the IVC are the uncinate process. So sometimes your tail will be blocked out by stomach gas, but normally you can get a look at the head, the body, the head, and the uncinate process area and look for masses and obstruction and those kind of things. So let's look again. I'm going to adjust my gain just a little bit. And sometimes it just takes some pressure to sort out. But that's our look at the retroperitoneum, at the pancreatic tissue. It'll always be in front of that, usually looking through the left lobe and anterior to the splenic vein. And just one other final tip about that. The pancreas starts high in the splenic hilum, and it runs down and diagonally to the head. They're usually 3 or 4 centimeters on a CT as you march through that body. So take your transducer, instead of just straight transverse, just angle it along where you expect to see the pancreas, and that will lay out the whole thing a little bit better from time to time. Okay, I think it's 5 o'clock almost. We will, she nicely filled her bladder. Okay, because you did. Okay. Oh, we probably need to get you to the bathroom pretty soon. Okay. We're going to finish here. Okay. So Kathy's nicely finished her bladder. Now I'm going to use those gain controls I was talking about to darken it. And there's the uterus back posteriorly to this very full bladder that Kathy's been nice enough. So you go sagittal on that uterus to look and make a decision about that, and then transverse and scan up and down through it to look at that, and the adnexa, using that bladder as a window. The end. You and Susie can get yourself to the... So, thank you very much. So, just my encouragement to you all, you can't hurt anyone with an ultrasound beam other than just misdiagnosis, or if you drop the transducer on their head. But otherwise, grab an ultrasound scan and take it to the ER, take it to places and use it and get some practice with it. That's hard in the U.S., but in the third world settings, it'll be your friend and really help you out. So any questions or anything before I go? Queller quits. So thank you very much for coming.